This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, May 6th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we learn more about a state rule that allows Arkansas children in state custody to be placed with fictive kin. Also, artist Sabine Schmidt discusses her new exhibit that explores the idea of home and is currently on display in Mullins Library on the University of Arkansas campus.
Plus, the duo Still on the Hill stops by the studio to discuss their latest CD titled Once a River. We'll also hear a few selections from the new album.
Those stories and more. But first, early voting began yesterday in Arkansas for primary and judicial elections. Several primaries across the state have been hotly contested. A new poll from Talk Business and Hendricks College is out and shows frontrunners in some of those races. Roby Brock of Talk Business and Politics says French Hill has a big lead over Conrad Reynolds and Ann Klimmer in the 2nd Congressional District GOP primary.
Hill is over the 50% mark in the poll, and so there is a good chance that he wins that primary election without a runoff, although there's still time for Reynolds and Klimmer to make a dent in his big lead and pull him below that 50% threshold. In the 4th Congressional District, there's just two candidates in the Republican primary, Bruce Westerman and Tommy Maul. Westerman has a very sizable lead over Maul, 47-10%. 43% still undecided, but it does look like Westerman is in the driver's seat in that race and will likely be the Republican nominee from the 4th.
There's no incumbent running for the 4th District seat, as first-term Congressman Tom Cotton is challenging Senator Mark Pryor. According to the Arkansas Secretary of State's office, 6,405 registered voters cast their ballots on the first day of early voting.
President Barack Obama is planning to visit tornado-ravaged areas of the state tomorrow. Yesterday, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney was asked why the president has not previously visited Arkansas while in office.
I don't even know how to respond to that except to say the president is focused and will be focused when he visits on Wednesday on the families of victims and on the first responders and on the efforts underway to help Arkansas rebuild.
Prior to the presidency, Obama last visited Arkansas in 2006 while serving as a U.S. senator to speak at a rally in support of Governor Mike Beebe's reelection campaign.
Also yesterday, the Federal Emergency Management Agency announced that more than $1 million in federal assistance has been approved so far for those affected by the recent tornadoes that moved through central Arkansas. According to the agency, the first mobile registration intake center was open in Bologna less than 8 hours after President Obama issued a major disaster declaration for Faulkner County. The first FEMA funds for individual assistance were approved less than a day later on April 30th. Less than 3 full days after the tornadoes hit the area.
Governor Mike Beebe joined officials with Verizon Wireless yesterday to announce a considerable expansion of jobs throughout Arkansas. Ginger Darrell with Verizon says current openings reflect significant growth in business and need for tech support.
The majority of the 285 positions are in the Little Rock Call Center, but we do have sales positions that are opening in Little Rock and Northwest Arkansas.
The hiring process has already begun. An open house for job candidates will be held Friday at Verizon's regional headquarters in Little Rock.
Development of the Razorback Greenway in Springdale will continue if the City Council later this month approves a proposal to close one city street. The proposal would close Mill Avenue to vehicular traffic. Patsy Christie, Springdale's Director of Planning and Community Development, says the road surface would be replaced with a 10-foot-wide pedestrian and bicycle trail as part of the Greenway project, which itself is a crucial part of the downtown redevelopment project.
We have the creek that goes down through the center of town, and it is in a box culvert, and this is property that's just adjacent to it. And for several many years, as we've been looking at downtown, we've looked at opening up the creek and bringing a trail down through it, and this has been part of that plan for quite some time. The city just purchased 2 buildings that will be removed. Shiloh Square is already down there on top of the box culvert, and this is just extenuating, creating a park-like setting in downtown Springdale.
Christie says the redevelopment process will necessitate temporarily closing the street during the next few days as crews prepare to tear down the 2 city-owned buildings along the street.
It's a one-way street now, and probably by the end of the month it will be closed to vehicular traffic. We hope to start tearing those buildings down by the end of this month or very soon next month. to start the Greenway project. The other sections of the Greenway are underway, and this is the connection between the two through downtown, and we are hoping to have most of the Greenway completed, all of it completed by the end of the year. There may be some final cleanup and some punch list items that need to be done. But hope to have the whole area opened up for pedestrians and bikers to go through by late October.
The section of the Greenway planned for Mill Avenue would connect northern and southern trails already under construction in Springdale.
The University of Arkansas has named its next lobbyist. Randy Massanelli, Senator Mark Pryor's state director, yesterday was named the university's next vice chancellor for governmental relations. Massanelli will take the position on July 1st, following the retirement of Richard Hudson, who currently holds the post. According to the university, Massanelli has worked for Senator Pryor as state director and as a campaign manager since 2001.
Rockline Industries in Springdale has been recognized for a superb safety record. According to the City Wire, the manufacturing facility has garnered an award from the Arkansas Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Division for achieving 4 million safe working hours. The award goes to companies whose employees have accumulated 4 million work hours without losing a day from work because of work-related injuries or illnesses. The plant operates on a 24-hour day schedule and works with private label folded wet wipes for major North American retailers.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals fell again yesterday to cross-state rivals the Travelers. The final score was 7-1. The four-game series concludes today at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale.
Forecast calls for partly cloudy skies tonight with overnight lows around 64 degrees. Tomorrow, Wednesday, mostly sunny with highs from 84 in northwest Arkansas to 87 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow evening, mostly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, lows around 64 degrees. On any given day, as many as 4,000 Arkansas children are in state custody, having been removed from their homes due to abuse or neglect. Once removed, children may be placed provisionally with a relative in a foster home or taken to an emergency children's shelter. But a new state rule now allows emergency placement with fictive kin. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich explains.
A half a dozen children play in the infant and preschool wing inside the Northwest Arkansas Children's Shelter in rural Benton County. The shelter provides 24-hour emergency residential care to young victims of family neglect, physical violence, or sexual abuse. One little boy runs up and hugs Greg Russell around his knees. He's the shelter's director of marketing, a misnomer, he says, because really what he does is educate the public about what the shelter needs and does, including serving as the only site within 200 miles that takes in babies.
This is the infant preschool wing. So we have 12 beds on this wing, but we're subdivided. So we have 4 beds for toddler boys, ages 2.5 to 5, 4 beds for toddler girls, 2.5 to 5, and then for birth up to 2.5, it's boys and girls together in our nursery. We have 4 cribs.
Children's art hangs everywhere. Faux black chalkboards line either side of the entrance hallway, covered with colorful tiny handprints, signatures of past and present residents.
So that sends a message to the kids right off the bat that this is going to be a fun place to be. It's not going to be something that they need to be scared of. It kind of puts them a little more at ease. And they see the children's artwork on display, so it lets them know that there are kids here.
The state-licensed private 48-bed shelter is a sprawling, secure complex with comfortable living quarters, recreational and educational facilities, a library, and a large dining hall where kids, some malnourished, get 3 squares a day. Steve Shada, executive director of the Northwest Arkansas Children's Shelter, says children that come here are often suffering from chronic neglect.
It can be environmental or neglect due to a drug lab in the home. It can be left alone when their guardian or parents are arrested and then they're discovered home alone. So neglect can look like, a number of different variations of what the cause might be.
Most arrive with nothing A case manager is assigned to each newly arriving child to build a comprehensive profile. They also receive intensive intervention, both medical and therapeutic.
I would call it that this is probably an oasis for them in their lives. We really focus on providing quality care, but giving them hope for the future. So as kids come in, they're assigned a case manager. And the fact that we have 48 beds and the way that the shelter is designed, each age group would have a case manager, so we have four case managers. The highest incidence of kids coming to care, frankly, is the birth through five age group, and that's the biggest need.
Removing a child from an abusive family of origin is a careful and legally complex process, which typically begins with someone calling this state-run child abuse hotline.
It can be a neighbor, it can be a teacher, and so often it's our dedicated teachers that see a change in a child. They might come in with bruises. They might have the same clothes on for a number of days. They might be constantly hungry. They might be dirty. So teachers are mandatory reporters, and so they could make a hotline call regarding a child. Doctors, nurses, certainly law enforcement, of course.
More than 8,500 valid cases of child abuse and neglect are reported in Arkansas annually, according to the shelter's data. And if there's probable cause, law enforcement and Arkansas Department of Children and Family Services staff are dispatched to the scene, and the child is removed. If removal continues past 3 days, then DCFS must petition a juvenile court for alternative placement. The children are legally allowed to stay in provisional shelters, like this one, up to 45 days.
And it's giving the caseworker with the Department of Human Services that time to either help determine is there a suitable relative they can live with, or are they going to go to a foster home for a longer-term placement. It's rare that they go right back home from the environment they were taken from, because in 45 days, it's very difficult to solve the issues, whatever they were, that caused them to come into care.
Last year, the Northwest Arkansas Children's Shelter took in 530 children. Since 1993, staff have cared for more than 6,700. They end up here because no one else can or will take them. But now a new state law enacted last summer allows the Arkansas Department of Human Services, Division of Children and Family Services, to provisionally place children with fictive kin. Spokesperson Amy Webb.
Kids obviously would prefer to be with someone they know, if that's at all possible. And so by creating fictive kinship, we are now able to look to those folks, maybe a godparent, a coach, or someone from church that the family knows really well, who already has an established relationship with the children, and we can turn to those folks and say, hey, can you care for these kids, while they're in our custody, because they're not safe in their home? That way those kids know the people who are caring for them, and we know that leaving a home, even if it's an abusive home, can be traumatic for children. So this is one of the things we are doing to try to reduce that trauma.
And fictive kin situations could also turn into permanent foster homes, she says.
Not only does that help the kids, but it also helps us expand a little bit in terms of our options for foster homes. It gets more foster homes into our system.
Amy Webb says the need is great.
Right now we have 1,248 foster homes, and those foster homes have the capacity to serve 2,991 children.
On any given day, 4,000 children are in state custody. Although foster homes can be found in every county in the state, sibling groups, older children, and special needs children, which may number into the hundreds, are hardest to place. Therapeutic foster parents, specially trained to care for children with disabilities, are helping to ease that situation some. And 2 years ago, another initiative began to provide subsidized guardians to extended family members willing to take care of children. Plus, a final new program for the moment called Differential Response allows DHS to use foster programming dollars to bring services to assist at-risk families. Again, spokesperson Amy Webb.
I know we've worked with families where the house was essentially really filthy and they had bugs. And so we worked with like a home improvement store and said, can you give us a sprayer and bug, you know, spray pesticide so that we can treat this family's house. And that's what we did. And it keeps these folks out of the child welfare system and out of that cycle of coming in and out, in and out.
Back at the Northwest Arkansas Children's Shelter, spokesperson Greg Russell says they welcome any measure that will help children to find shelter and healthy homes.
One of the problems with foster homes is that it's a pretty high burnout rate of foster homes. And in some cases, you know, a foster home will be open and then they'll begin an adoptive process of one or more of the kids that they've been fostering. And so they will close their home because, you know, they're kind of full. They've adopted these kids permanently, taken them into their home, and they no longer have the capacity, you know, to take in foster kids. So about as quickly as foster homes are added, foster homes are closed. And that's one of the things that DHS has shared with us, one of their challenges.
Families, couples, and individuals interested in becoming foster families should start with fosterarkansas.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, visit nwacs.org. If you would like to take an audio walking tour of the facility, you can listen to the audio extra for this story at ozarksatlarge.com.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Michael Cunningham. His latest novel tells the story of two brothers looking for purpose and belonging in midlife. The author of The Hours on Aging and the Search for the Sublime.
Listen to the Diane Rehm Show tomorrow morning from 9 to 11 on KUAF3. You can listen with an HD radio.
Home has different meanings to different people, and one local artist is exploring that relationship.
I started thinking about what that means to be in your home and not being able to leave. So that idea is about 3 years old, but it's based on research that I've done over about 6 or 7 years that has to do with how people perceive space in cities, that has to do with walking, experiencing space, built space, because in cities you can't really find any nature that hasn't been modified in some way.
That story coming up in the second half of Ozarks at Large.
Early voting for primary elections began yesterday, and this week, Jacob Kaufman from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock is speaking to candidates for the governor's office. Today's conversation is with Democrat Lynette Bryant of Little Rock. Bryant, a substitute teacher, faces Mike Ross in the Democratic primary.
Arkansas's current tax structure has lower income residents paying a higher percentage of their income than wealthier residents. Can you detail some of your tax ideas?
Well, you know, I have not written out any tax ideas at this point, but I would work with those who has and look over and review those tax ideas that has been there. I have a master's in biochemistry, so I basically research everything to make sure I can compare, because there's often something out there. So in working with the legislature, then we would decide what is best. I found that if you make too many promises beforehand, then what kind of governor will you be? Because you've got to come forward with those promises.
That in mind, though, do you have any general philosophies on tax structure, whether or not there should be a higher percentage paid by the wealthy or poorer people or corporations?
I think that we have to look at everything and see how it affects Arkansas's budget and the people. If you're overtaxing folks, then we have to also look at the fact that will we lose our wealthy? We want them to stay here. For instance, in New York, they're losing a lot of their wealthy citizens who often donate and give back to the state because they feel as though that they're being overtaxed. We don't want to lose our base. So we're going to have to really take a look at that.
And could you articulate your position on the private option, which is Arkansas's plan to use expanded eligibility and funds from the Affordable Care Act, intended for the federally run program, but Arkansas has chosen to purchase private insurance for those low-income individuals?
When I talk to different people about the Affordable Care Act, a lot of Arkansans do not want it. So it's like an alternative to it. For instance, this one elderly lady who does not want the Affordable Care Act, she's paying Blue Cross Blue Shield. And she had stated that her quarterly has increased $200. So look at that, and that's $400 plus the amount of base in which she had to pay. Plus she has a spouse. So at what point can she still afford $1,000? You've got to look at that. When you look at the Affordable Care Act, it's really needed for someone who has catastrophic illnesses or high blood pressure or diabetes. They need that. So I think you have to come up with a plan that works for those people, something like people who want food stamps can get food stamps, and folks who do not want food stamps do not get them. So then when you look at it in that respect, there are so many Arkansans that don't want to have anything to do with the Affordable Care Act. You have to address that.
Well, with that in mind, though, just looking at one aspect of it, the part that the state arguably has the most control over, the private option, is that a program, it'll be coming up for review every year of the governor's term. Would you press the legislature to continue that program or discontinue it?
Well, if we have citizens, the majority of the citizens that I've talked to at this point that do not want the Affordable Care Act, you have to have an option. And that being the option, we're just going to have to go with that unless we can find something different. You have to go in with an open mind.
The state legislature has aggressively pursued restrictions on abortion. Do you support those efforts, including an act currently being challenged banning abortions, most abortions, after 12 weeks?
When I look at abortions, I look at an individual, and I still believe that the person has the right. Because when we die, it is the individual who stands before God and says, this is my sins. And so I look at it in that respect, that individual is standing before God and saying, this is my sins. This is what I've done wrong.
So does that mean that you support the ban on abortion at 12 weeks or you oppose it?
At this point, I have not made a decision on that.
A lot of what you've talked about, the majority of the time, has been that the Democratic Party of Arkansas itself is unfair and not giving multiple candidates a chance. They seem to have pre-selected their endorsements, which they're not allowed to do. Do you think any of that has to do with the fact that you waited till near the deadline to file and that you haven't actively tried to raise money?
No, I don't. Because, you see, it is not just me that has a right to run for governor. Everyone does. I was not complaining. But at some point, when do you say enough is enough? I've had enough. And then a Pulaski County Chair Committee letter stated that we are getting ready to push for Democrats coming out and working for our party. And they state different names and they state Governor, parentheses, Ross. My name is not there. The primary has not taken place. So when I look to see that the primary has not taken place and we are not following the general rules in which a Democratic Party should take place. So when you look at all of those rules and you find that they are not being followed, then I'm stepping up and saying, follow the rules.
That was Jacob Kaufman from our content partner, KUAR in Little Rock, speaking to Lynette Bryant of Little Rock. She is one of two candidates seeking the Democratic nomination in the primary election for Arkansas's gubernatorial race.
Methane levels in the atmosphere have skyrocketed, changing the climate calculus.
Comparing methane to carbon dioxide, it's about 100 times stronger. But after about 70 years, that strength is about equal to CO2, and then it continues to decay from there.
New metrics for methane in the race to save the planet. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Sundays at 5 p.m. on 91.3 FM.
It is Tuesday, May 6th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers is with us.
And, you know, I really know nothing about music.
Okay.
I've established that.
You have?
However, I love a good story.
Okay.
And Shannon Wurst is a good story.
She's a good storyteller, too.
She is. Mm.
Did you know that she was a dog musher?
I did not know that. I don't know how. I suppose I wouldn't have thought to ask somebody, hey, have you been a dog musher?
No.
What is a dog musher?
Like, you're the person that tells
that the dogs.
That
tells the sled dogs to go.
Oh,
okay.
And she worked somewhere where they did, like, we go on carriage rides. People went on dog sled rides.
Uh-huh.
And she was the dog musher.
Very cool.
Who knew? She said she learned something really important. The dogs don't care if you're still on the sled or not. So there's only one rule. Hold on. If you flip over, hold on, even if the dogs are dragging you, because they'll run 15 or 20 miles while you're back there going, wait, Stop. So this is her secret story. She still loves the outdoor stuff, and this summer she's going to lead two whitewater music trips.
Which sound very cool. I've talked to her about those.
They do sound cool. But in the meantime, she is going to be the last of the new Art Center of the Ozarks performances on Maine.
Mm-hmm.
This will happen at 7:30 on Saturday, and they're in the downstairs gallery. Very intimate seating. And tickets are $12 for ACO member adults, $8 for member students, $16 for non-member adults, and $9 for non-member students. It starts at 7:30 Saturday, and you really need to call for reservations because these have sold out all year. 751-5441.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Eureka Springs is one of the top arts destinations in Arkansas. This historic village of 2,100 residents, over 200 artists, and more than 35 galleries welcomes the May Festival of the Arts. This month-long festival offers art exhibits, events, and more. Eureka Springs, where American art is made. Safe water ensures good health and quality of life. The Beaver Water District, a member of the American Water Works Association and its partners, monitor and protect Beaver Lake, the drinking water source of Northwest Arkansas. Drinking Water Week is this week. Consider pouring a glass of water and hailing a toast to Beaver Lake. You drink it every day. More information available at bwh2o.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
In just a few minutes, an exhibit inside Mullins Library on the University of Arkansas campus visits the notion of home as many students prepare to pack up their dorm rooms and head home. But first, University Programs is hosting the War and Peace Project through May 23rd in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery at the University of Arkansas Union. The exhibit is open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. The project includes more than 750 individual collages. The works were designed by the six-member Team Tolstoy, and there were three simple rules for the project. Each collage must contain at least one word of the original War and Peace text. The artist may not redo or touch up any collage, and the artist may decide whether to respond to the storyline or not. Again, that's in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery in the Arkansas Union.
Daily Bread by Sonia Davis Gutierrez and Color Function by Michael Davis Gutierrez are on display this month at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. The artists will be present for a reception from 6 to 8 Thursday evening. More information is available at acozarks.org.
The exhibit, Translating Earth, Transforming Sea, features works from Sean Bitters, Joan Hall, and Laura Moriarty, and was curated by Andrea Packard. That exhibit is now on display through June 21st inside the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. This Artisphere exhibition features works by nationally recognized artists whose sculptural transformations take inspiration from geologic or oceanic change. Their multi-layered sculptures are composite forms that integrate distinct materials, creative strategies, and sources of inspiration. This exhibit is free and open to the public.
This month's featured artists at the Fayetteville Underground are Gregory Moore, whose solo reception is scheduled for the evening of May 22nd, and Janice Ward. The Underground is open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday, and from noon to 5 p.m. Sunday. For more, visit FayettevilleUnderground.com.
The works of Texas-based artist Ben Lowery are now hanging in a show at Arcega's at the Depot in Fayetteville. Ben has studied at the Mount Gretna School of Art in Pennsylvania and the Jerusalem Studio School in Italy. His show of recent small paintings is entitled Point, Scratch, Squint and will be on display through May.
Each spring, the Congressional Institute sponsors a nationwide high school visual art competition to recognize and encourage artistic talent in the nation and in each congressional district. An exhibit on display at the Fort Smith Regional Art Museum features works of a number of high school students in the 3rd District and will be on display through May 21st. The exhibit was organized by Congressman Steve Womack as part of the district finalist selection for the 2014 Congressional Art Competition. The winner of this award will have their work displayed for 1 year in the White House in Washington, D.C.
As many students are smack dab in the middle of finals or putting the finishing touches on semester projects, some may call the library home. A May afternoon inside Mullins Library on the University of Arkansas campus may seem quiet, but the cavernous main room is abuzz with students. They're cutting paper, huddled around a computer screen with group members, or they're printing off study guides. They drink their coffee here, eat here, socialize here. Some may even sleep here. And as they cram, behind them, hanging on the random walls in groups, are 17 photographs that portray the idea of home. Sabine Schmidt's collection of work explores the relationship between people and built space. This project is related to her dissertation, and she's been working on it for quite some time. But these conceptual photographs began about 3 years ago, during a snowstorm in 2011, when Schmidt was stuck inside her own home, looking out through her windows.
And I started thinking about what that means to be in your home and not being able to leave. So that idea is about 3 years old, but it's based on research that I've done over about 6 or 7 years that has to do with how people perceive space in cities, that has to do with walking, experiencing space, built space, because in cities you can't really find any nature that hasn't been modified in some way.
That led into thinking about built space that people inhabit rather than just pass through. She's been working on it for 6 or 7 years. And over those years, her notion of house and home hasn't really changed. Schmidt herself does not own her home.
And I think part of that is that I'm afraid of what might happen to it. So renting a place seems less risky in some way. I think in my artist statement it says something about, you know, it's a major disaster if you lose your home, and we've just seen that with the tornadoes. So that hasn't changed at all. It's not like I'm feeling like I need to buy a home or build a home or anything.
She's curious about others' homes, very observant when she's there, paying close attention to their objects, trying to get a sense of what that place feels like. By day, Schmidt is an English and German teacher at Haas Hall Academy in Fayetteville, incorporating art and photography into her classes daily. Schmidt is an art teacher fellow, part of a year-long arts integration workshop between the University of Arkansas, Walton Art Center, and Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. She often brings art into her English classes to show how the two relate, or how art relates to everything. For instance, when her students were studying Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher.
There's this idea of the house as being sentient, as actually having a psychological influence on Usher. And so we were discussing this idea. Can you think of a house as something more than an object? And that leads straight into my research and straight into my photography. The idea that a house is more than just, you know, four walls and a roof, but that there's a connection, a psychological or emotional connection that people develop to the space that they inhabit.
This exhibit of conceptual photos tries to elicit those connections. Schmidt wants people to see the house as a most basic shape and explore how they relate to home. Most of these photographs include at least one house that Schmidt has made herself, from paper, plastics, or other pliable materials. The shape is the most essential form of house she could come up with, and one that many a student may doodle in the margins of their notes. Her favorite house is made of watercolor paper, a softness she likes and carries with her almost everywhere.
I try to have a house on me at all times, whether I'm walking or driving. And sometimes I have a place in mind, a place that I've explored before, and I'm thinking, there needs to be a house there. I need to experiment with that. But a lot of the times it's just, I happen to pass a place and I'm just curious. That's why I have several different houses, depending on the place that I see.
Set My Watch Against the City Clock is the name of the exhibit, and a line from a Bill Callahan song, Drover. In the song, Callahan is talking about being a solitary man who lives out in the country as a cattle drover.
And I just love that contrast, what happens when you go to the city, that you have to change how you approach life, how you approach your behavior, how you modify your behavior, and how you deal with just being surrounded by so many people. I was really drawn to that line from the song, and it somehow seemed to fit what I do.
Many of the photographs are slow. A house with a creek behind it. A house among some trees. Or many houses on a rock in front of a field. Even the photos that have been taken in a city or in a busy location have a slow feel. Like the one taken on a city street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. On a Saturday afternoon, Schmidt was walking around a part of town that is quiet on the weekends when she happened upon a storefront.
A realtor, and it said, "We buy houses." And I happened to have a little paper house with me, so I just set that up as a visual juxtaposition. And as I was doing that, three people, a mother and her two small children, came walking down the street. The only people, so the three people and I, we were the only ones there. And it completely changed the quality of the photo because all of a sudden there were people, and it added a different energy to the photo. It made it faster because they're walking, and they're walking towards me, and they're blurred.
She took many pictures after without the people in it, but those wound up not being what she wanted. The final product for this exhibit, she ultimately used the one with the mother and children walking behind the house in front of a yellow and red "We Buy Houses." Though most do, not all of Schmidt's photographs include her handmade miniature houses. One is of an actual building, and it isn't even a house. It's the rear view of a building in Johnson, not far from what was once the one-lane bridge and across the railroad tracks. Four walls that were once perhaps the post office or a grocery store. They exhibit the simplicity that she is drawn to. Schmidt returns to this building often, taking pictures at various times of day and of the year to see how it changes. Since she began coming here a few years ago, a door has been added and ivy has begun to grow. One of Schmidt's favorite photographs was taken inside of a building, a small country chapel that she happened upon during her explorations. She often just drives looking for interesting locations. The photograph is of a mustard yellow suitcase that rests on the back pew inside the chapel. The case is open, and inside are many of her little houses. The suitcase is actually one of a set that Schmidt found in a corner inside of the chapel. She's also interested in suitcases, as they are almost the opposite of a house, something portable in which people bring their belongings with them.
So I looked in the suitcases. The top one was empty, but the others had photo albums, and they seemed to belong to one person, and there were photos of that person, also a woman. The photos dated back to the 1920s. And I just looked at them, just spent an hour just looking at this person's life, wondering how her photo albums and how her suitcases had ended up in that church. So I came back another time, brought all my houses. The door was still unlocked, fortunately. I just, you know, went in, put all my houses in the empty suitcase and took a photo of that.
Though it was taken 2 years ago, nothing has changed since this photograph. She actually went to this location, which she would not divulge, just 3 weeks ago. Another photograph also includes suitcases. They're on the front porch of a home. There's a person leaving, going down the front porch steps. Though it is dark, there are small houses scattered about the yard. This photograph speaks to people, she says. Maybe because of the hot pink suitcase, but perhaps they also wonder who the person is, where they're going. Then they begin to notice the houses. The confusion may elicit the tension that she's going for between the object and the location. It's intended to bring about thoughts on place and belonging. Set My Watch Against the City Clock will remain on display at Mullins Library on the University of Arkansas campus through the end of May. This is Ozarks at Large.
Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tacky. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one. And they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
The duo, Still on the Hill, has a new CD coming out, and Kelly and Donna Mulholland used Beaver Lake and its history and prehistory as inspiration. The collection of songs on the CD, Once a River, were written by Donna and Kelly after they had been approached by the Association for Beaver Lake, or ABLE. Recently, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to Donna and Kelly about the CD.
Is it true that the last song on this CD, What's Done Is Done, was the first one written?
It was. I'm glad you asked that, because that's really how this whole thing got started. First of all, the idea was the brainchild of Tony Mitlich from the organization called ABLE, and that's the Association for Beaver Lake Environment. And this man, he'd seen us doing our historical songs, and he had the idea that it would be beneficial to put together this album to benefit the lake and the watershed. Well, when he asked me, he didn't realize that I actually grew up on that lake and that I was 4 years old when they flooded the lake, and my folks had property right there in what is now LaRue. And so I had to, even though it was a great way to grow up, and kind of like paradise, you might say.
Mm-hmm. That lake was his ocean.
Right,
sure. It was beautiful. But as an adult, I became more mindful of the other side of the equation, which is a reservoir, you know, because there's a downside. There's a lot of environmental impact, and there's a lot of cultural impact. And so here
cemeteries
we are.
Cemeteries were flooded.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And here we are being asked to devote half of, a year to this lake, which I have very mixed feelings about. And so it was really good timing, because I really needed to sort that out. And this project gave me an opportunity to do that. And that first song is my attempt to actually sort this issue out in my own head.
He was testing the waters.
Right. And it's kind of, in retrospect, it seems kind of silly, because it's so obvious now that it's all water. It doesn't matter whether it's in a bathtub or a creek or a river or a lake. It's all precious. And I guess, our generation, I guess you're the same age as me, we're probably the last generation that can live like there's no end to the water supply. Those days are over. All water is precious. And it's going to be the responsibility of every single citizen of Northwest Arkansas to be mindful of how we impact the watershed.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the reconciliation of those memories of your youth, because you have a lyric in that song that you refuse to let those memories be tainted. Those good times.
That's true. That's true. I want to hold on to that, of the paradise part.
Right.
And actually, in it's, you know, it's helping me to fall in love with the lake again. Mm-hmm. I've always loved the lake, but, we still have that property. My family still has that cabin on Beaver Lake in LaRue.
And we love it.
And I love it. And
our son spent every single birthday party there. It's part of our life.
But this issue has I needed to reconcile those two things, and this album forced me to do it.
In 64, they flooded the land. At 4 years old, I could hardly understand. I've only the faintest memory of the cool, wide river beneath my feet. I never saw the forest cut down, folks lose their homes and cemeteries drown. Only saw that clear blue lake, and the joy of my childhood I'll not forsake.
Several years ago, someone asked me why Lost Bridge Marina was called Lost Bridge Marina. I did not know. Now, thanks to Once a River, I know. This is an amazing story.
Isn't that a fun story?
This bridge was built in 1929, but no road, and it was to connect Garfield to Eureka? Yes.
It was made during boom times, I guess.
Yeah.
And, they built a very elaborate bridge, very substantial structure. But then the Depression came and money ran out, and they just never connected it to the feeder roads that would have, so the bridge sat there unused during its entire lifetime.
Yeah.
And then only in 1943, I believe, to be washed away by a flood.
So it sits at the bottom of Beaver Lake right now. So it's truly a lost bridge now.
It was never, ever used.
No, apparently. I think maybe some wagons,
sure,
or some people would just kind of
Pedestrians
would go use it.
But they never connected it to the roads on either side, so it would have been most difficult.
Way back the turn of the century, The Ozark Mountains were rugged and steep. Folks in Garfield needed a road to get to Eureka Springs, I am told. But the old White River was deep and wide. If you wanted to get to the other side, you needed a boat and a wing and a prayer, 'cause there ain't no roads waiting over there. Lost Bridge.
Donna just had a really good idea of starting with that Flood of 27 song, which kind of gave, we thought, a perfect starting place for all this.
A lot of people don't realize that when the flood of 1927 in the Mississippi flooded, one-third of Arkansas was underwater, one-third of our state.
And some
underwater.
Of it 30 feet deep. We're not talking like a small amount.
Yeah.
Yes.
It started the great migration of folks moving up to Chicago, up north.
Right.
And because of that, we have this series of dams all along the White River. And a lot of people don't realize that. Some people that have just moved to northwest Arkansas don't even realize that the Beaver Lake is a reservoir.
That's true. It was, I guess that's another part, gets back to Abel and why they wanted to do this in the first place. And by the way, it's not just Abel. It's also the Beaver Water District, the Beaver Watershed Alliance, and the Ozark Water Watch. Those are our primary partners. And all four, you know, one thing, it's amazing that four different, completely separate environmental groups were so seamlessly able to work and collaborate together. And we saw this firsthand. We saw everybody meeting, and they're all just one happy family.
On the same page about the same
I think that's pretty unusual. You'd think they'd have some turf wars, you know, but not even slightly. They all are good friends, actually.
And the Arkansas Arts Council also matched all this.
And they matched the funds, and Shiloh Museum helped us out. So the idea was that Tony had was that so many people, we've been growing so fast in northwest Arkansas, and most people have moved here recently, and they have no idea where that lake came from. And they don't really even know what the White River, what it was. And so they kind of take the lake for granted. But like I said earlier, we can't take the lake for granted anymore. So this is an opportunity for people to discover where this lake came from and through stories and songs feel somehow connected to it. And hopefully in that process, they will feel some ownership and some responsibility.
Almost every cove has a name. And almost every cove that is named is in Jay's song.
Well, I got me a friend and his name is Jay. Gonna paddle every inch of Beaver Lake, all 487 miles. Counting all the coves and counting all the isles. Guess it's gonna take him a while. Going down Joe's Creek, Ford's Creek, Horseshoe Bend, North Fork, Tanglewood, come around again. Kirk Hollow, Van Hollow, Tippecanoe, Mill Hollow, Penitentiary Hollow, and the Roo.
That's true. We had more fun with that. Jay Schneider is he is one of the interpreters at Hobbs Estate, and a good friend of ours. And he told us how he had these plans to explore. He was going to paddle every single inch of the lake, up and down every cove, and it's 487 miles.
Short
That's
line.
A long ways, you know. And it's going to take him a couple of years, but he's well into it now. So we thought that would be a fun song. So we just took a map of Beaver Lake and scoured every creek, every hollow, and all these names. There's a lot of colorful names, you know, Penitentiary Hollow and Escalapia Hollow. And
any idea what the story behind that is?
No.
Okay.
No, that's out of my neighborhood, might say.
Out of my neighborhood.
Literally.
But anyway, so it was a tongue twister for sure. We just kind of rapid fire all these different places.
You know, you've done this project, and someone came to you because they had heard the other stories that you had told and gathered.
Right.
What if someone else comes up to you a year from now and says, you know what? I'd love for you to do a series of songs about Mount Sequoia or Garrison Avenue or Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Yeah, bring it on. We're there.
That would be a dream.
We would love that.
You know, we travel widely, and that's traveling is okay. But our long range plan is trying to figure out how to be closer to home and how to serve our area. We like being connected to Northwest Arkansas, and we like our community. And so this is kind of falls perfectly into that plan, you might say, in that we're able to work very close to home and get more connected with our community, and hopefully it will grow from there. Because like
Yeah, regionally, it would be lovely. We would.
That's our dream.
Which do you think would be more difficult, given that you're a perfectionist, Kelly, to write 11 songs about something that's pretty close to you that you've experienced, or if someone came to you and said, you know, I'd like you to write songs about Spiral Mounds, which
right.
maybe you haven't, well, you obviously don't have nearly the experience with.
You know, I think we're comfortable with any of that.
Okay.
As long as we go to that place and have touchstones.
Sure.
I have to, for me to write a song, I have to go kind of just immerse myself in that space or that place.
Yeah, it's not enough just to tell a story. And by the way, Donna's doing most of the songwriting. I did write several of these songs, but the majority of them are written by Donna. And and she's very prolific. She's really amazing at what you just said about somebody telling you a story or showing you something important, and she can quickly move it into a song form, which is very mysterious to me.
You know, I think we collaborated on this one more than anyone we've done, because on many of them, I would have a song kind of etched out, and then I'd give it to him, and he'd rework it and add his flavor. And I'd say this is truly more of a total collaboration than anything we've ever done.
Maybe
on
so.
On a lot of levels.
Maybe so. That's true.
And maybe that's because you did grow up there. Your influence on the Cedar song, it's my favorite song on the CD, but we went and kayaked. We needed to take some photos, and we kayaked among these cedar trees in the lake along the shore that were just had been there, dead, flooded trees for 50 years. And Kelly said, I used to canoe and fish in these very trees. Those same trees have been there for 50 years. And the Cedar song is kind of like the giving tree. It's these trees having the birds perch in their branches and the fish lay their eggs in their roots. And he inspired that as we were out there in those very trees.
Donna and Kelly Mulholland are the duo Still on the Hill. And their new CD is titled Once a River. They'll perform songs from the CD at several locations in the near future, including May 27th at the Walton Arts Center Star Theater as part of the Artisphere celebration. Other dates include June 20th at Ozark Folkways in Winslow, June 28th at Shiloh Museum in Springdale, and July 26th at Hobbs State Park. You can learn more at stillonthehill.com.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Is the amount of screen time we get today harming our eyes? We'll hear some tips for combating eye strain, including the 20-20-20 rule.
20-20-20. Every 20 minutes, look away at least 20 feet for 20 seconds. Give your eyes a break.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Atkins.
Atkins.
It used to be the home of the pickle.
Home of the pickle. Well, I'm glad you brought up pickles, because tomorrow we will be talking about pickles in our monthly food series. I spent some time with Garrett Gunderson of Gunder Pickles, and he sort of talked to me about their family's recipe. It's over 100 years old. They say it's about 100 years old, and he makes pickles here locally, and we'll have more on that story in tomorrow's show.
I know him personally. He's a good, fun guy.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm very much looking forward to actually getting to eat the jar of pickles that he made for me.
Yep.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. We will end today's show with some music by The Airplanes. The name of the song is Young. The band will be performing tomorrow night at 9 at the Lightbulb Club in Fayetteville, along with Stardeath and White Dwarfs. Admission is $15, and the show is for 18 and up. Thanks again for listening, and have a great Tuesday. Things to shake them, and some live vicariously through others. But we're not like those before us, and we made our own choices, and we're free like a ripped bag of leaves in autumn. But oh, you know what they'll say. They'll say.